Osho, a bird on the wing, talks on Zen. Discourse number 7, given at the Osho Commune International, Pune, India.
Steve Master, Enkidu, was a severe teacher, and his pupils feared him. One day, one of his pupils was striking out the time of day on the temple gong, and he missed a beat because he was watching a girl passing the temple gates. Akira was standing just behind him, and he struck him with his staff. The shock was so much that the pupil's heart stopped and he died. Because of the old customs that fallen, Akira was discredited by the general public. But despite this, he had 10 enlightened successors, which was an unusually high number.
This type of phenomenon is special to Zen and Zen masters. Only a Zen master beats, hits his disciples. And sometimes it happens that the disciple is dead through beating. Ordinarily, this looks very cruel, violent, mad, and religious people cannot conceive how can a master be so cruel to kill a disciple. But those who know, they feel differently. A man who is enlightened knows well that nobody is ever killed. The inner is eternal. It goes on and on. It may change bodies, but the change is only of the houses. The change is only of dresses. The change is only of the vehicles. But the traveler goes on and on. Nothing dies. Secondly, the moment of death can become the moment of enlightenment also, because both are so similar. When someone becomes enlightened, it is a death, deeper than ordinary death. When someone becomes enlightened, someone comes to know that he is not the body. The attachment, the identification disappears. For the first time, he can see an unbridgeable gap. He is here, body is there, and there is abyss between. He has never been the body, and the body has never been him. This death is deeper than ordinary death, because when you die ordinarily, still you are identified with the body. And this death is still deeper, because not only you are unidentified with the body, but your identification with the mind, with the ego also disappears. You are left simply as an emptiness, as an inner space, boundless. Neither you are the body nor the mind. In ordinary death, only body dies, but the mind goes on following you like a cell. And mind is the problem, not the body. Through the mind, you have become one with the body. And unless the mind disappears, you will go on getting into newer bodies and newer vehicles, and the wheel of life will go on and on. When you become enlightened, suddenly you are not the body, you are not the mind. And only then you come to know who you are. The body is a seat. The mind is also a seat. Hidden beyond them are you. Sometimes it happens that a Zen master can coincide the moment of your death and your enlightenment. In the right moment he can hit you. The body falls down, everybody can see that. But deep within the ego falls down, only you and the master knows. It is not cruelty. It is highest form of compassion. And only a very great master can do that. Because it is very subtle to feel the moment of your death and to make it a point of inner transformation and transfiguration. Look in this story. And you may think, because that is how the story appears, that the master killed the disciple. That is not the thing. The disciple was going to die anyhow. That was the moment for his death. The master knows it. He simply uses that moment of death for his enlightenment. But this is the inner secret, something esoteric. I cannot defend Ikudo in a court because of this. The court will say he is a murderer. And there is no way to prove that he knew anyhow the disciple was going to die in that moment. Why not use that? An ignorant person cannot use life. An enlightened person can even use death. That's how a master should be, using everything for enlightenment. Ikido was just standing behind this disciple, and he was beating the gong of the temple. And the master was watching. If this disciple can die in awareness, the death will become the point of the turning of the wheel. If he can die in awareness, if he falls but remains conscious, the body falls, but deep down he remains centered, alert, aware, then this will be the last death. Then he will not need to be reborn again. Remember, if you can die with full awareness, the wheel of life stops. Because you can enter in a new body only if you are unaware, unconscious. When someone dies fully conscious, this world disappears because there is no birth again. That's why we say an enlightened person never comes again. A Buddha simply disappears. You will not be able to meet him again in body. You can meet him in bodilessness. He is everywhere then, but not in body. You cannot meet Buddha somewhere. because only a body edges somewhere. When body disappears, Buddha edges everywhere or nowhere. You can meet him here. You can meet him there. You can meet him anywhere, but don't look for him in the body. Body edges somewhere. When body disappears, the soul, the consciousness edges everywhere. You can meet him anywhere. Wherever you go, you can meet him. Body is there because the mind is seeking desires through the body. Desires cannot be fulfilled without the body. You can be completely fulfilled without the body. Really, you can only be fulfilled without the body. But desires cannot be fulfilled without the body. Desire needs the body. The body is the vehicle of the desire. That's why possession happens. You have heard, many students must have heard, that a ghost possesses somebody else. Why a ghost is so much interested in possessing somebody else? Because of the desires. Desires cannot be fulfilled without the body. So he enters somebody's body to fulfill his desires. The same is the case. You enter in a womb, in a fresh body, and it starts the journey of desires. But if you die alert, in that alertness, not only the body dies, all desires evaporate. Then there is no entering in a womb. Really, entering in a womb is such a painful process. It is so painful that consciously you cannot do it. Only unconsciously you can do it. The English word anxiety comes from a Latin root which means narrowing down. And in the beginning, the word was used for the entry of a soul into a womb. So the first anxiety is felt when a soul enters a womb because everything is narrowed down. Infinite soul becomes a small body. This is the most painful process possible. As if the whole sky has been forced to enter in a seat. You don't know it because it is so painful that you became totally unconscious. There are two painful processes. You may have heard Buddha say, birth is pain, death is pain. These are the greatest pain, greatest anguishes possible. When the infinite becomes a finite in the womb, it is painful, it is anxiety. And when again the infinite is taken out of the body in which it has become so much attuned, identified, again there is anguish and pain. So whenever someone dies consciously, he disappears. Then there is no more entry into the body. Then there is no more anxiety. Anxiety is the consequence of desire. Then you need not to be narrowed down because there is no desire to be fulfilled. You can remain infinite. There is no need to enter a vehicle because now you are going nowhere. This disciple who was beating the gong of the temple must have been near his death, close. And the master was standing behind him because of this fact that the disciple was going to die any moment. This is not said in the story. This cannot be said. But this is how the thing happens. Otherwise, there was no need for the master to stand behind the disciple when he is beating the gong. There are many more important things for the master to do. Beating the gong is just ordinary thing, everyday ritual. Why the master was standing behind him? This Ikido seems to be a strange fellow. Had he not to do anything more significant? But at that moment there was nothing more significant, because this disciple was going to die anyhow. His death has to be used. And only a master can use death out of compassion. He was waiting whether he remains alert at the moment of death or not. He missed. The story is beautiful and very significant. He saw a beautiful girl passing. His whole consciousness was lost. He became a desire. His whole being became a desire. He wanted to follow this girl, possess this girl. Whenever there is desire, consciousness is lost, because both cannot exist together. Desire exists with unconsciousness. It cannot exist with consciousness. So when you move in desire, consciousness disappears. Hence so much insistence of all the Buddhas and Jinas for desirelessness. Because when you are desireless, you will be aware. When you are aware, you will be desireless. These are two aspects of the same coin. On one aspect, desirelessness, on another aspect, alertness, consciousness. The story is significant. Seeing a beautiful girl pass, the disciple missed himself. He was no more there. He became a desire. He started following the girl. He entered a dream. He became sleepy. He became unconscious. Sex is the midpoint between death and birth. Between birth and death is sex. Really, between birth and death, there is nothing but sex. An extension. From the moment you are conceived, you are conceived out of sex. And from the moment you are conceived, you start on a journey of sexual pleasure. The moment you die, this continues. And sex is so powerful that even if death is standing there, you will forget it. If sex takes the grip, then everything can be forgotten. You become completely mad. The form of the girl catches his mind. He is no more there. He was alert just a moment before. Now he is not alert. You may have heard stories, Indian stories, of rishis, seekers, doing austerities, meditating in their forest abodes, in the hills. Always it happens that whenever they reach a point of awareness, suddenly sex arises. Apsaras, nymphs from the heaven, descend. As if they are just waiting. for someone to come to a point of awareness. As if there is a subtle conspiracy against achieving awareness. Deep hidden in a forest, someone achieves a little awareness suddenly. Nymphs are there, beautiful girls from heaven, not of this earth. Perfect. You cannot conceive anything more perfect. The body as if of gold, transparent. Suddenly the awareness is lost. The Rishi has become a man of desire. He follows. From where these apsaras come? Do they really come from heaven? Is there some conspiracy against awareness? No. They come out of the mind of the seeker. The mind, when sees that everything is going to be lost, he uses sex as the last weapon. When the mind sees that now awareness is reaching a crystallization, once crystallized, mind will not have any say. Mind will be dropped. This is the last struggle. Suddenly mind creates sex and the desire for sex. The mind projects. So I say to you, there may have been no girl passing. It was just the moment of death, and this man was aware. The mind plays the last trick. That is the last. If you win that, you have won the mind. The mind will play other tricks and always preserve sex as the last. The last resort. If sex cannot work, then nothing can work. Mind depends basically on sex. Look in your mind, you will find it is 90% sex. Thinking about sex, dreaming about sex, projecting in the future, remembering the past, but always about the sex. And sometimes even if you feel that it is not thinking about sex, ponder over it, meditate, you will find that other things also it desires because of sex. You may think to become wealthy, but what you will do with your wealth? Just ask the mind, and the mind says then you can enjoy the body, then you can get the most beautiful woman possible. The mind may think that become a Napoleon, a Hitler, but ask the mind what you will do with power. Suddenly, you will find hidden somewhere the sex, the desire. This girl may not have been there, passing. Or, even if the girl was passing there, the girl may not have been so beautiful as she looked, as she appeared. In the first place, I think there was no girl. Just the moment of death and this man's awareness, he was beating the gong, fully alert. This is part of meditation in a Zen monastery. Whatsoever you do, do with awareness. Walk fully alert. You move your head, be fully alert. Whatsoever you do, follow it with alertness. Don't miss it. Don't think of anything else. Be there, in it, as a light. Everything is revealed. Every act, every nook and corner of it is lighted. Nothing is in dark. Eat with awareness. This is all in a Zen monastery one has to do. 24 hours alertness. So this disciple must have beaten the gong with full alertness. Really, the gong is beaten to make everybody alert. He must have been alert with the sound resounding in the monastery. Suddenly, the girl appeared. From where? In the first place, I think there was no girl. The mind projected. In the second place, even if there was a girl, the girl was not so beautiful as the mind thought it. It projected. The girl was just a screen. The dream came from the mind and was projected. That's how it is happening to everybody. When for the first time you fall in love, the girl is not of this earth. It comes from somewhere else. It is an apsara, a nymph from heaven. But by and by, the more you become acquainted, the girl becomes more and more earthly, ordinary, homely. Then suddenly you find there is nothing. This was just an ordinary girl. And then you think you have been deceived. This girl has deceived you. Nobody is deceiving you. Your mind projected. Your mind projected so that the desire can move. Beauty doesn't exist in things. Beauty is a projection. Beauty is not objective. It is subjective. So one day somebody looks beautiful, another day the same person becomes ugly. It is you who project. It is you who withdraw. The other works just as a screen. Once you come to know that mind projects beauty and ugliness, mind projects good and bad, then you stop projecting. For the first time you come to know what objective reality is. It is neither good nor bad. It is neither beautiful nor ugly. It simply is. All your interpretations drop with the projection. So this disciple, at the moment of death, was going to be alert and aware. The mind did the last thing, the final result, created beauty around. A beautiful girl appears, and awareness is lost. The mind becomes dim, desire arises, the soul is no more there. The disciple becomes the body. That's why all religions so much insist to transcend sex. Unless you transcend sex, the mind will play the last trick and he will be the winner, not you. But repression is not transcendence. It is escape. Move into desire with full awareness. Try to be in the sex act but alert. By and by you will see the emphasis changing. The energy will be moving more into alertness and less into sex act. Now the thing has happened, the basic thing has happened. Sooner or later the whole sex energy becomes meditative energy. Then you have transcended. Then whether you stand in the market or sit in a forest, apsaras cannot come to you. They may be passing from the street, but they will be no more there for you. If your mind is there, absent apsaras become present. If your mind is not there, present apsaras disappear. at this moment when the disciple missed awareness, the master hit him hard on the head. I would like to do the same for you in your moment of death. But it cannot be tolerated here. In Japan, it was one of the oldest traditions. Whenever a disciple comes to the master, he says, "My life, my death, both are yours. If you want to kill me, you can." This is what surrender is. And he signs, he writes down and gives it in writing, because the law, the state won't listen. The law will not listen that because he was going to die, that's why you hit him. The law will say, "You hit him, that's why he has died." Because the law moves from the visible, and the master moves from the invisible. The master is seeing the invisible death reaching. He hits just to make this disciple alert. And a very hard hit is needed. When mind is moving in sex, ordinary hit won't do. A real hit is needed. A real electric shock-like thing. It is an old story. If in the future there will be monasteries like old Zen monasteries, an electric shock can be given, not to hit by stuff. But something so shocking that the whole being trembles. Something so shocking that there is a break in the desire which is leading you out. The master hit the disciple so hard, he died. This is the visible part of it. He fell down and died. What happened inside? What is the inside story? When the master hit the disciple, this was the moment of his death. Desire was arising. Because in the moment of death, if sex is there, only then you can enter into another womb. Otherwise, you cannot enter. Men dying on bed, if they are conscious, always think of sex. It may be strange. Old man, even a man of 100 years, dying on bed, almost always thinks of sex. Because sex is the first and the last in the body life. He may have been thinking of God before. He may have been chanting Ram, Ram, Ram. But suddenly at the moment of death, everything drops and sex appears again. It is natural. The first must be the last. You were conceived out of sex. You must die with the sex in the mind. So old, dirty men are not just myth. The body is almost dead, but the mind continues to think. And old men think more about sex than young men, because young men can do something about it. Old men cannot do, they can only think. The whole phenomena becomes cerebral, mental. In the moment of death, you are preparing for a re-entry. Entering the womb. Try to understand it deeply. Why so much attraction is there in entering the feminine body, the female body? What you gain out of it? while making love, when your whole being wants to penetrate the feminine body, what you gain out of it? Psychologists say, and spiritualists have always been alert about it, that it is again the same symbolic act of entry. Not only when you are born, your being enters into the womb of a woman. This persists the whole life. Again and again you want to penetrate the female body. You want to reach the womb again and again. Sex means the urge to penetrate the feminine body, to enter again into the womb. They are both same, whether you enter as a seed or you enter just in a sex act. But the urge to enter. At the moment of death, sex must come in the mind. And if it comes, you have missed. You have created a desire. Now this desire will lead you again into another womb. You will enter. The master is waiting behind. The masters are always waiting behind the disciples, whether physically or non-physically. And this is one of the greatest moments when a person is going to die. The master hit him hard. His body fell down. But inside he became alert. The desire disappeared, the girl passing was no more passing. The street was no more there. Everything dropped with the body, shattered. He became alert. In that alertness he died. And if you can join alertness and death, you have become enlightened. That's why a miracle happened. Ecuador's tradition became one of the most significant traditions in Japan. 10 persons attained enlightenment. People started to wonder, this cruel man who has killed, this aggressive and violent man who has killed, why his disciples are becoming enlightened? And a rare number, 10 is rare. One master's 10 disciples becoming enlightened is very rare. Even to help one to become enlightened is too much. But there is nothing strange. It is a plain arithmetic. Only this type of master can help. And whenever I have read this story, I have always wondered why others missed. This man could have enlightened many. But those who were afraid, scared, filled with fear, simply must have escaped from this man. People would have stopped coming to his monastery because he is dangerous. One thing is said about Akido, that when this disciple died, he never said anything about it. He never said the disciple is dead. He continued as if nothing has happened. And whenever somebody will ask, what about the disciple, he will laugh. He never commented anything about it. He never said that the disciple is dead. He never said that something has gone wrong. He never said that it was just an accident. Whenever someone will ask, he will laugh. Why he was laughing? Because of the inside story. people can know only from the outside. If I hit you hard and you die, people can only know that the man is dead. No one will be able to know what has happened inwards. This disciple achieved something, something which Buddhas make efforts for many lives to attain. And Akido did it in a single moment. A great artist, a great master. He used the moment of death so beautifully, and the disciple attained. The disciple disappeared not only from the body, the disciple disappeared from the mind. The disciple was never born again. This was the total death, no rebirth. But in Japan, people had become accustomed to such type of things. You will go to a master, he may throw you out of the window. He will jump on you and start beating. And you were asking a philosophical question, whether God exists or not, and he starts beating you. Aikido helped many persons to become enlightened. Only such a man with such deep compassion can help. But a very great surrender is needed. It is said that the disciple's parents came to see, when the disciple was dead, they came to see Aikido. They were very angry, obviously. They had only one child, and that is dead. They were old, and they were depending on him, and they were waiting that sooner or later he will come back from the monastery and help in their old age. In Japan, monastery life is a periodical thing. You can go to a monastery, become a sannyasin, remain there for a time being, study, meditate, attain a certain quantity of alertness, a certain quality of being, and then come back to the life as an ordinary householder and live the life. Sometimes again, if you feel that you are missing and the mind has become dim and confused, you go again. So it is not a permanent style of life to become a sannyasi in Japan. Few people follow it their whole life, that is their decision, but you can come back. And this is not thought to be a guilt. In India, it is a guilt if you become once a sannyasin and then come back and get married and become a householder, then everyone looks at you that you have fallen. This is nonsense. This is foolish, because the whole country cannot become sannyasins. Only few people can be sannyasins without doing anything, and they will have to depend on others who are doing, who are active in life. And sannyas should be available to everybody. The whole country must be able to become sannyasin, but that is possible only if you can be a sannyasin in ordinary life. You can go to the office, you can work in a shop, you can be a laborer or a teacher or a doctor or an engineer and still be a sannyasin. So people move to the monastery. That is just a training period. So the whole time is devoted to meditation. Then they come back. They keep the quality and come back to the ordinary life, become ordinary citizens, work in life as far as the outward life is concerned. Inside, deep, they go on trying for the inner flame. Whenever they feel something has become dim, whenever they feel they are missing consciousness. They go again to a monastery, be there for a period, and come back again. So this old couple was waiting for the boy to come back, and he is dead. They must have been angry. They must have thought many things against this master Akido. They came. They looked at Akido. They were waiting. He will say something kind to them. What Akido said? He said, "Why you are waiting? Follow the boy." You have wasted enough life. Don't waste it anymore. And they looked at Akido's eyes. They forgot their anger. This man cannot be cruel. The compassion was flowing. They had come to complain. They simply thanked Akido and went back. When you come to a master, be ready to die. Beating any gong, falling in desire, following a girl, the master can hit you any moment. If you are not surrendered, the hit will be useless. The master will not hit you because you will miss it. It will not be of much use. This disciple must have been one of the most closest, most intimate, and so surrendered that he will die but will not complain. He fell down without a complaint, as if the body dropped like an old dress, and inside there was light, more light. He entered that light. Be ready to die, only then you can be reborn into an altogether different dimension. That dimension is the dimension of the divine. Don't protect yourself. Your protection is your undoing. Don't try to safeguard. Near a master, be insecure, because he is your security. Be unsafe, leave everything to him, and wait for his hit. Any moment it can descend on you. But if you have not surrendered, it will not descend. Because no master is interested in hitting you. No master is interested in killing you. Masters are interested only in making you fully enlightened. That can happen only when your death and your awareness meet. Very difficult, very rare combination. But a master can see when you are going to die. It is written, because your body has a fixed span. It can be read. An astrologer may miss it. A palmist may not be able to read it. Because you are such a liar, even your palm lies. You are so deceptive that even your forehead will not say the truth. And you are so afraid of death that unknowingly unconsciously you hide it in the innermost chamber, the knowledge of it. If you are a true person, authentic, you yourself will become aware when you are going to die. So Jain masters have been forecasting their death. They always tell when they are going to die. But even then people don't believe them. How can we believe that you can know death? We have hidden it so deep and we never look at it. Astrology may fail because it is an outer science, reading something from the outer towards the inner. Palmistry may fail because it cannot be very certain, your hands cannot be believed, you cannot be believed, your whole body lies. And your lines on the palm can be changed very easily. For 15 days, think of suicide, and your lifeline will be broken. Continuously for 15 days, don't think of anything. Just think of suicide, committing suicide, picturing, dreaming. Within 15 days, your lifeline will be broken. So the mind can create or change. If you go to a palmist and he says, within 3 months you are going to die, he may have misinterpreted. But if this idea settles deep in you, you will die in 3 months. And within 3 months your lifeline will be finished. It will break. Your hand is not influencing your mind is continuously influencing your hand. I have heard about one Egyptian king. He was very much afraid of death. And he was very weak and ill, and always on his deathbed. He came to know about one astrologer who predicted the death of one of his ministers. And exactly on time, the minister died. The king thought this man is dangerous. The king thought that this man has done something like black magic, and he has killed. And to allow this man to be alive is dangerous. He can do the same to me. He called the astrologer, asked him that, tell me something about my death, when I am going to die. The astrologer looked at the king's face, felt something dangerous. The man was very ferocious. He suspected. So he made the chart, studied it, and then said, you will die after I have died, within a week. So the king called all his doctors to look after this man. A palace was created for him. The best of food and everything. And the greatest of doctors just in his service. Preserve him, because he says, if he dies within 7 days. And it is said the king lived very long, because that man was alive, and that was a very healthy man. And the king died only when that man died. Within a week he was dead. Your mind goes on changing. And if your mind is a liar, Don't go to any palmist. The palmist will be deceived. But you cannot deceive a master, because he never reads your palm, he never looks at your forehead. He is not worried about your stars. He looks deep in you. He knows the exact moment of death. If you surrender, the death can be used. This story is beautiful. Meditate on it. The same can happen to you. But much readiness is needed. Ripeness is needed, and surrender.
Being near you, some layers of the fear of death seem to go away. But the last line of this Zen story says 10 were enlightened, and this was a great number. And 10 doesn't seem a great number to me. Can we buy you a big stick?
Ten is really a big number, because enlightenment is so arduous, so difficult to achieve, almost impossible. So 10 is a big number, but even bigger numbers have happened. With Buddha, hundreds became enlightened. With Mahavir, hundreds became enlightened. The basic thing is not how to buy my stick. You cannot buy it. It is how to allow it. It is not a question of master hitting you. It is a question of receiving the hit. Welcoming it. If you resist, nothing can be done. And resistance is there. In ordinary things, resistance is there. Death is very big, the ultimate. In ordinary things, one man was here and he said, I want to surrender. I told him, think about, what do you mean? It is difficult, it is not so easy you come and tell that I surrender. I told the man, you go and first save your head. The man said, that's very difficult. That I cannot do. I love long hairs. The man has forgotten completely, he was going to surrender to me. He cannot cut his hairs, and hairs are dead already. Hairs are not a live part of you. That's why you can cut and you are not harmed. Hairs are death, already dead. Something which has gone dead, thrown out of the body, dead cells. This man says he cannot cut the hair because he loves long hairs. And he is ready to surrender. He doesn't know what surrender means. If I say to someone who comes to me and says, I am ready to surrender, if I say to him, change to ochre, he says, that will be awkward. It will be difficult. He cannot change his dress to ochre. He is ready to surrender. The word surrender has become meaningless. It carries no meaning to him. What he is saying, he is not aware. Otherwise, to utter the word surrender, his whole being will tremble and shake, because it means death. My stick is there. I can hit you. Your readiness is not there. And if I hit you before you are ready, you will simply escape from me. Many escaped. Many have escaped because I had hit them somehow or other. And don't think that a stick is really the visible thing. I use subtle sticks. Just a word can hit you to death. You are shattered, your logic, your religion, your concepts are hit and you are shattered and you never come back again to me. I hit your emotions, then you become antagonistic to me. Your ripeness is needed. You have to welcome the hit, wait, pray for it. In Zen, it has been one of the oldest traditions. Whenever a disciple is hit, the whole monastery becomes happy and the disciple is received as something special. The master has hit him. The disciple has become chosen. People wait for years to be hit by the master. They pray. They ask the master, when we will be capable, or when will we be fortunate enough, when your stick, your staff will descend on us. A deep receptivity is needed. There is no need to buy my staff. It is always yours. Only have a welcoming heart, a deep receptivity, patience. It can descend on you any moment. Sometimes it comes nearer you and you are scared. Sometimes on many centers of your body I hit, but then you are scared and then you want to escape from it. Be alert of the mind. The mind will always tell you escape. Wherever is danger, the mind will tell you run away from here. The mind has two ways of encountering a situation. One is fight, another is flight. So either your mind starts fighting with me, I can see. When I am talking, I can see in your eyes whether you are fighting or flighting. Your very look, the way you sit, the way you hear, shows that you are fighting, resisting, withdrawn, creating a space so I cannot enter in you. Or you are on a flight, then you are sleepy, you are not listening at all. Or you are somewhere else, thinking something else. You are engaged within, so you can escape. When you will be ready, neither flight nor fight, just a prayerful patience and waiting. Not even impatient about it, because impatience creates a tension. Not even impatient, just patiently waiting, passively waiting, with a prayerful mood. The hit is yours. I am waiting for it. And many more than Akido's disciples can become enlightened. The possibility is there. The opportunity is there. The river is flowing. But whether you will bow down and take a drink or remain egoistic, turn away from the river, thinking either a flight or a fight, creating all your own ideas around you. Whether you will allow your mind to take you away from me, or whether you will put it aside and allow me to hit you, everything depends on it. The hit is always near. But you go on wavering. This disciple was hit by Aikido. He was really surrendered. And after his death, many more were ready. From somewhere, the chain is to be broken. When one light is kindled, many more follow. Who will be the first to die? That's the question. Once this disciple was dead and inside enlightened, many followed. Ten became enlightened. But this word ten is also worth thinking. This ten is symbolic, because ten is the greatest number. It is not exactly ten, it is not arithmetical. Ten is just the greatest number. Man started counting on his fingers, and ten are the fingers. Even now in villages, people count on the fingers. So ten is the highest number. Then all other numbers are repetitive. 11 means 1 upon 1. 12 means 2 upon 1. Then there is repetition. 10 is the basic number in all the languages of the world. Because everywhere man has 10 fingers. These are the 10 digits. So 10 is the highest number. It is symbolic. 1 dropped into infinity, then many followed. Once the abyss is open, and you see someone entering it, and you see the bliss, the benediction. You can also enter it very easily. You can take the jump. Many are getting ready. But even if you are 99% ready, the hit cannot descend on you. The hit can descend on you only when 100% ready. Because then it is a revolution. You can turn back even from 99%. That's the problem. It is very unfortunate, but it happens. I have been working with many, many people. Sometimes they turn when the right moment was coming to be. Exactly before that moment they turn away. And mind is cunning enough, it can philosophize. It can say why you have turned away. But exactly at the moment when something was going to happen, you can turn away. More possibility to turn away from that moment than from any other moment. Unfortunate, but it happens. You wait and wait and wait, and then the moment is nearing when the evaporating point will be reached, and suddenly you turn. To resist that turning is very difficult. It is just like death reaching nearer, 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 and seeing the abyss, you turn away and run as fast as you can. Remain alert. This misfortune happens for seekers. It can happen to you. Buddha passed from a village many times in his 40 years of traveling. One man used to come. He will listen for a few minutes, then get up and go away. And this has become a habit. He never listened to Buddha for the whole time he was speaking. He will come, that was certain. Whenever Buddha will come to the town, he will wait for that man. He will come, that was certain. He will sit for a few minutes, he will listen, then respectfully bow down to Buddha and he will go away. Ananda once asked that man, that why you do this? He said, sometimes that is the peak hour for my business. I must come just to pay my respects, that's why I come. But my shop is open and customers are there. And they will not wait. Enlightenment can wait. Next time I will hear. It happened again and again. Then the day Buddha died, he was near the village. And before his dying, he asked Ananda, that man has not come. This is exceptional. He never missed. He always missed in a sense, but he never missed. He was always coming. He has not come. Then Buddha asked his disciples, have you to ask anything? Because soon I will enter in the final samadhi, the final ecstasy, and then I will not be able to come back and answer you. They started weeping and crying, and there was no question. And Ananda said, we have asked everything. You have answered everything. And there is nothing. Our minds are blank, just thinking that you are going to disappear. Buddha asked thrice, again and again. There was no answer, so he went behind the tree, closed his eyes, just to dissolve into the infinite, to leave the body. And then suddenly the man came and he started fighting with the monks. He said, "No, I must see him. This is the last. I will not be able to see him again, and for 40 years I have been missing. And I have a question to ask. Never I could ask before, because sometimes there was marriage in my family. Sometimes business was at peak. Sometimes I was ill or my wife was ill, or sometimes there were relatives staying. I always miss, but now don't prevent me." Disciples said, "It is not possible." Now he is dissolving. Buddha came out from his ecstasy, from his final samadhi. He came in front of the tree and he said, "Don't prevent that man, because he may have been foolish. He may have missed because of his ignorance. But I cannot be hard on him. I am still alive. So let him come. No one should say that Buddha was alive and a man who has come begging was returned back." Buddha said, "What have you come to?" Question. The man has forgotten the question. He said, "When I came, I knew. But now I can't remember. Next time when I will see you, I will bring the question. And there is going to be no next time. Buddha died that day. And that man must be wandering somewhere on this or on some other earth, seeking a man who can answer his question. He missed Buddha for continuously 40 years. You can miss me. Always remember that possibility. But it will be because of you, not because of me. I am always ready. Whenever you are ready, I will hit you. But a deep surrender is needed. Before that, nothing can be done. You have to die. Die as you are. So that which you are really can be born out of you. You have to die as an appearance, so the real can be born. You have to die on the periphery, so the center evolves, comes out in its luminousness, in its full perfection. All hits are to destroy the seed, so that the tree is born. Anything more, Tip?
There have been several questions about when you were talking about warriors and businessmen, and it was noted that we're all businessmen or professionals and no warriors. So the warrior was, "But we now come to get enlightened because we're busy."
To be a warrior doesn't mean to be a soldier. It is a quality of the mind. You can be a businessman and be a warrior. You can be a warrior and be a businessman. Businessman means a quality of the mind which is always bargaining, trying to give less and get more. That's what I mean when I say businessman. Trying to give less and get more. Always bargaining. Always thinking about profit. A warrior is again a quality of the mind. The quality of the gambler. Not of the bargainer. The quality which can stake everything. This way or that. A non-compromising mind. If a businessman thinks of enlightenment, he thinks it as a commodity. In many other commodities, he has a list. He has to make a big palace. He has to purchase this and that. And in the end, he has to purchase enlightenment also. But enlightenment is always in the last. When everything is done, then. When nothing remains to be done, then. And that enlightenment is also to be purchased. Because he understands only money. It happened to one, a great rich man came to Mahavir. He was really very rich. He could purchase anything, even kingdoms, even kings borrowed money from him. He came to Mahavir and he said, I have been hearing too much about dhyana, meditation. The time you have been here, you have created a craze in people. Everybody is talking about dhyana. What is this dhyana and how much it costs? And I can purchase it. Mahavir hesitated, so the man said, you don't think about the cost at all. You simply say, and I will pay. There is no problem about it. How to talk to this man? Mahavir was at a loss. What to say to this man? Mahavir said, you go. In your town there is a man. A very poor man. He may be willing to sell his dhyana. And he has achieved. And he is so poor. He may be ready to sell it. The man thanked Mahavir, rushed to the poor man, knocked at his door and said, how much you want for your dhyana? I want to purchase your meditation. The man started laughing. He said, you can purchase me. That's okay. But how I can give you my dhyana? It is a quality of my being. It is not a commodity. But businessmen have always been thinking in that way. They donate to purchase. They create temples to purchase. They give, but their giving is never a giving. It is always to get something. It is investment. When I say to be a warrior, I mean to be a gambler, to put everything on stake. Then enlightenment becomes a question of life and death. It is not a commodity. And you are ready to throw everything for it. And you are not thinking about profit. People come to me and they ask, what we will gain out of meditation? What is the purpose of it? What will be the profit out of it? Their whole life is economy. If 1 hour is devoted to meditation, what will be the gain? warriors is not after gain. A warrior is after the peak, after the peak of experiencing. What a warrior gains when he fights in a war. Your soldiers are not warriors. They are just servants. Warriors are no more on this earth. Because the whole thing is being done by technology. You drop a bomb on Hiroshima. The dropper is not a warrior. Any child can do that. Any madman can do that. Really only a madman can do it. Dropping a bomb on Hiroshima is not being a fighter or a warrior. The war is no more the same as it was in the past. Now anybody can do it. Sooner or later only mechanical devices will do it. A plane without a pilot can do it. And the plane is not a warrior. The quality is the last. The warrior was facing, encountering the enemy face to face. Just think, two persons with drawn swords encountering each other. Can they think? If they think, they will miss. Thinking stops. When swords are there drawn, thinking stops. They cannot plan, because if they plan, in that moment the other will hit them. They move spontaneously. They become no minds. The danger is so much. The possibility to die is so near. Mind cannot be allowed. Mind needs time. In emergencies, mind cannot be allowed. When you are sitting in your chair, you can think. But when you are facing an enemy, you cannot think. If suddenly you pass through a street, a dark street, and you see a snake, a dangerous snake sitting there, what you will do? Will you start thinking? No, you will jump. And this jump will not be out of your mind, because mind needs time. And snakes don't have any time. They don't have any mind. The snake would have struck you. So mind cannot be allowed. While facing a snake, you jump. That jump comes out of your being. It comes before thought. You jump first and then you think. This is what I mean, the quality of a warrior. Action comes without thinking. Action is without mind. Action is total. You can become a warrior without going to the war. There is no need to go to the war. Whole life is emergency. And everywhere there are enemies and snakes. And ferocious wild animals ready to attack you. The whole life is a war. If you are alert, you will see it. The whole life is a war. And any moment you can die. So emergency is permanent. Be alert. Be like a warrior. As if moving amidst the enemy. Any moment, from anywhere, the death can jump on you. Don't allow the mind. And be a gambler. Only gamblers can take this jump. The jump is so much that those who think of profit cannot take it. It is a risk, the greatest risk. You may be lost and nothing may be gained. When you come to me, you may lose everything and you may not gain anything. I will repeat one of Jesus' sayings. He says, whosoever clings to life, whosoever preserves it will lose it, and whosoever is ready to lose will preserve it. But this is talking in the language of a gambler. Lose it. This is the way to preserve it. Die. That is the way to reach the eternal life, the immortal life. When I say a businessman, I say a calculating, cunning mind. Don't be cunning minds. No child is a businessman. And it is difficult to find an old man who is not a businessman. Every child is a warrior. And every old man is a businessman. How every warrior becomes a businessman is a long story. The whole society, education, culture, conditioning makes you more and more fearful, afraid. You cannot take any risk. And everything that is beautiful is risky. Love is a risk. Life is a risk. God is a risk. And God is the greatest risk. Through mathematics, you will not reach. Only through taking the ultimate risk, putting everything that you have at the stake. And you don't know the unknown. Known you risk, and the unknown you don't know. The business mind will say, what are you doing? Losing that which you have for that which no one knows whether it exists or not. Preserve that is which is in hand. And don't long for the unknown. The warrior mind says, the known has been known already. Now there is nothing in it. It has become a burden. To carry it is useless. The unknown must be known now. And I must risk the known for the unknown. And if you can risk, total risk, not preserving anything, don't playing tricks with yourself, not withholding anything, suddenly the unknown envelops you. And when it comes, you become aware that it is not only the unknown, it is the unknowable. It is not against the known, it is beyond the known. To move in that darkness, to move in that uncharted, without any maps and without any pathways, to move alone into that absolute, the quality of the warrior is needed. Many of you have it still a little left, because you were once a child, you were all warriors, you were all dreamers of the unknown. That childhood is hidden, but it cannot be destroyed. It is there. It is still have its own corner in your being. Allow it to function. Be childlike, and you will be warriors again. That's what I mean. And don't feel depressed because you run a shop and you are a businessman. Don't feel depressed. You can be a warrior anywhere. It is the quality of the mind to take risks. The childlike quality to trust. and to move beyond that which is secured. Enough for today.